This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
Live from Toronto, Canada, The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
Well, there we go. Turn on the light, dummy. All right, welcome to the Audio Imaginarium. My name is Richard Serrett, and this is The Conspiracy Show. An honor and a privilege to be with you as always. Thanks for the cookies, Dr. Ginescu. They're good for dipping. That's the good Dr. George Ginescu, who hosts Big Band Sunday Night here on our flagship station, AM 740, the program that precedes this one. Summer is winding down, and a few rare opportunities, I guess, still remain to get the boys out to Bluffer's Beach and to watch the sunset and enjoy a bonfire, maybe squeeze in one last fishing trip, a few more ball games. Speaking of which, how about those Blue Jays? I got to tell you, I got a feeling this could be our year. It is, it's been, what, 23 years? So we are due. We are long overdue. Albert Vinzel is here running our Google Hangout tonight, and to join, just go to the Twitter feed, at Richard Serrett, and click on the HOA link near the top of the feed. Then you can see me in studio. And our first guest tonight is not using the webcam, but you can hear his end of the conversation, and there's a ton of interesting pictures in the slideshow that you'll be able to view. And Albert has also posted his usual assortment of fascinating tidbits and news items in the slide carousel up at richardserrett.com. There's a really cool story titled How to Call the International Space Station. Last week, amateur radio enthusiast Adrian Lane sent a call signal to the International Space Station, and to his shock and delight, he got a reply. He chatted with an astronaut for about 45 seconds before the station went out of range. And if you're interested in following up, that story's there, again, at richardserrett.com in the slide carousel. If you're interested in reaching out to the souls of the dearly departed, there's another how-to guide up on the website entitled 20 Ways to Contact the Dead. And just in time for tonight's interview with a victim of electronic harassment, an important read on electronic harassment from the perspective of a targeted individual. Again, those are just a few of the stories we've posted on the website slide carousel at richardserrett.com. And a quick note about the website. Over the years, I have come to realize that a lot of you have trouble finding the website because of the spelling of my last name, S-Y-R-E-T-T. I suppose I could change my last name, but it served me well for the last half century, and it's far easier for me to change the URL on the website, so that's what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be rebranding the website in just a few weeks. It'll be unveiled, and from that point on, I'll be directing you to strangeplanet.com. Strangeplanet.com. Not yet. It hasn't been unveiled. I'm just giving you the heads up. It's easy to remember. It's easy to spell. And then from that landing page, that home page, you'll be able to go in one of three directions. You can go to the radio page, which will look pretty much the same as it does now. You can go to the TV page, and that's the home of the conspiracy television program. And you can go to a live events page for news on upcoming live events. So again, just a heads up. StrangePlanet.com will be the new website. Speaking of the TV program, I will be making an announcement about Season 4 probably next week, and this will be very good news, folks. So listen for that. I have a lot of mail tonight, but before I do that, very quickly, Albert, do you have the camera ready? We have our new technical producer who is with us, Ian Robertson. Now, you've been with us a couple of weeks, but this is our first time meeting face-to-face. So, Ian, welcome aboard. Can we see him? And I don't know if we're actually streaming, Albert. on my, we are, we're streaming. The HOA is up and running. Excellent. I'm not seeing it on my Mac here, but no matter. There is Ian flexing his, those guns of his. Look at him. He looks, you look like you're 14 years old. No. I have socks older than you. All right. He's a good looking kid in there, and he's our new technical producer. So many years and welcome aboard again. Lots of mail tonight. Before we get going here, I just wanted to mention this. Really terrific mail. And I have one here from Australia. R.P. Holt, who is watching the TV show and very much enjoying the TV show, which airs in Australia. He says it's on the History Channel down there, but I believe it's Fox. I may be wrong about that. I'll have to check with my my partner, my TV partner at Film One. However, R.P. Holt in Victoria, Australia, he says, your show, The Conspiracy Show, is a great venue to put events out to us. I watch whenever it's on and thoroughly enjoy. He goes on to talk about specific specific episodes. Anyway, he then continues, Richard, would you please come over to meet with me at my home, and I can give you some very important material. Also, you could have a great little holiday. I feel sure you will not be disappointed. All right. Well, thanks for the invite, Mr. Holt. Maybe one day I will make it to Australia. Now, very quickly, I want to read this letter because this is important and it's apropos. And I don't want to identify this woman by her full name, and she writes in longhand. She's in South Carolina. She writes, to whom it may concern, my name is Kay. She goes on to say that she's been blacklisted by the shadow government, which controls most of the globe. She says she's being framed for some kind of sexual abuse or deviant behavior and feels sure she will not live long. I've been writing, researching, and studying the media from all sides and have come to the conclusion that we have all been duped for years, she goes on. I'm sending the enclosed documents for your perusal and will follow up with a flash drive with everything I've collected since the surveillance began in earnest in the mid-1990s. Please pass this information on to anyone interested. And it goes on for quite some time, and then there are some attached documents, which I'll look at later. But, you know, I get one of these letters or emails now about once a week. I kid you not. Very sincere individuals who believe they are being targeted. And I say this letter is timely because we're going to be talking about electronic harassment for the next 40 minutes or so. Now, I say harassment, but that's really a misnomer. It's really electronic torture. And as I say, I receive weekly correspondence now from people who believe they are being remotely targeted, tortured by some type of directed energy weapon. They're being monitored, tracked. Their sleep is being disrupted. And that is only the beginning. Voice-to-skull technology being utilized. And that technology is real, folks. 100% voice-to-skull technology exists. Michael Fitzhugh Bell has been with us before. He's back with us again. He tells a true story of an innocent man becoming the unwitting target of a secret criminal organization using high-tech weaponry, microchip implants, and mind control on its victims, leaving no evidence. The organization, he says, is covert, highly organized, well-funded, and uses the latest technology. This heinous, unconscionable crime has gone global and rapidly has become a huge national problem. Michael Fitzhugh Bell has been drugged, abducted, he says, raped, surgically implanted with illegal microchip implants, all done without his knowledge or consent. He's being tracked, stalked, and tortured 24/7 and physically burned remotely with directed energy weapons, which most people don't even know exist. His every thought and feeling is being read in real time by his perpetrators via GPS and current cellular satellite systems, making him quite literally a human piñata. Michael Fitzhugh Bell is the author of Invisible Crime, Illegal Microchip Implants and Microwave Technology and Their Use Against Humanity. Michael, welcome back to The Conspiracy Show. How are you?
Hello, Richard. Thank you for having me back. It's nice to be here.
It's been a few years since we spoke to you last.
It's been a couple years. It's nice to be here again.
Well, how are you? Give us an update. How are you physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually? How are you doing?
I have to say it's very challenging being targeted, and thank you for the intro. So some of the people that really aren't familiar with this crime may have some idea. It's very difficult in terms of just survival. Whereas before this crime hit me, I was having a regular life as a chef, as a writer, screenwriter out in Hollywood. And this crime came in and stopped my life in its tracks, just absolutely stopped it. And it overwhelmed me with fear, and then trying to explain what was happening to me to other people, especially my family members, law enforcement, neighbors. It puts the victim in the absolute worst position they could possibly be in many ways, making the victim their own worst enemy. That's how cleverly designed this crime is.
Right. They pit family member against family member because it's happening to you, but it's not happening to, let's say, for example, brothers, sisters, parents, and then they begin to doubt you. So now you're isolated, you're ostracized, and that's how they break families apart.
That's correct. That's correct. It's, you have to, and also, the thing is that most people, what it is, this crime, the sophistication of the technology makes it very difficult for people to grasp and understand the capabilities that now people actually have the capability to interface with the human mind directly. It's what it really is, Richard, is it's a weapon system.
They're hacking the human brain.
That's correct. Actually being able to read a person's thoughts as they're happening, as they occur in real time. It's the most sophisticated. It's a weapon system.
I call it electronic torture because the word harassment is used, and that to me downplays the severity of what's going on. For those who are unfamiliar, run through sort of the litany of I won't use the word symptom, but the effects that you are subjected to. Run down some of the physical, mental tortures that are being perpetrated against you.
Well, you were nice to recognize the title. Electronic harassment is the coined term, but it is in actuality electronic torture. Electronic slow kill, electronic assassination. It's especially for new victims. It never gets any easier, but what a victim experiences is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, pain, either shooting pains or stings or a dull pain in specific areas of your body, wherever you are, in an airplane, at a hotel, at a restaurant, outside, at the beach, anywhere you are, you can get attacked. And there is no letting up. There is no point where you've had enough and it's done. It's never ending and ongoing, and it's some of the effects, I would say, can be anything from dull aching pains to sharp pains to blurry vision to dizziness, even to the effect that this technology can actually simulate the effects of drugs on the victim, making the victim feel drowsy, making them feel like they can't sleep.
So if you were in an important meeting, if you were
depriving them of sleep altogether.
Right. If you were in an important meeting, let's say, could they cause you to fall asleep in the middle of that meeting? Could they make you blurt out certain things almost like you had Tourette's?
They could. But also what happens more often than not is you get bombarded by so many different inputs that it's difficult to even make a decision sometimes. It's overwhelming.
What about heart palpitations? Can they make your heart race?
That's correct. They can affect your heart rate, your motor cortex, your urges. It's the temperature of your body. You know, as soon as you go to sleep, if you can go to sleep, often you'll be, whether it's winter or summer, you'll be perspiring, and then you'll take the blankets off and you'll be freezing, and then it's back and forth. There's no comfort zone. There's no
relief. Michael, listen, I've got to take a time out. Stay put. We'll come back. Michael Bell, author of The Invisible Crime, Illegal Microchip Implants and the Microwave Technology and Their Use Against Humanity. Back with more of The Conspiracy Show. My name is Richard Serrett. Before we get back to our conversation with Michael Fitzhugh Bell, just a quick note, because I just received this email. I mentioned off the top of the show about rebranding the website. It's going to be strangeplanet.com. And a number of people immediately emailed and said, oh, no, what about my membership? And am I going to have to re-register? No. The radio page, which is richardserrett.com, nothing will change there. If you've got a membership, you're fine. It's just, it's going to be easier for people to find Strange Planet as a landing page, and then from there you can go to the radio, the TV, wherever. All right, so not to worry, but thank you for bringing that to my attention, because that's important to address. Now, the Google Hangout is streaming nicely. Thank you to Albert Wenzel for that here in studio. And if you go on, if you join the link, and you can find it at the top of my Twitter feed, at Richard Serrett, we've got this really powerful slideshow there. We're speaking with Michael Fitzhugh Bell, who is a victim of electronic torture. And there are some photographs that we're looking at, Michael. Many people are not on the stream, so they're not going to be able to see those. But there are pictures of a number of surgical procedures that have been performed on you, things that have been removed from your person, from your body.
That's
Explain
correct.
For those who are not able to see those, and those that are, actually, what are we looking at here? What are these images of these things that have been removed from your body?
I've had several images. Some of them, I think, are MRIs of foreign bodies and embedded in my body. The actual thing that was removed from my body is actually what's known as a nanotechnology illegal biomedical implant. And that was removed from my jaw. I had to go to about 10 different doctors. Nobody wanted to touch me. I knew that there was something definitely wrong when I had to go to 10 different doctors to get this thing removed. And finally, I found a doctor who was willing to remove it. And it took him about an hour to get it out of my jaw. He thought it was going to be a five-minute job, and it was about the size, a half the size of a BB, and it was what I believed to be a biomedical implant. And technically, if you have something removed from your body that's not organic, the retainership of that, whether it's a bullet, whether it's a piece of wood, whatever is being removed from your body is the ownership of the person it's being removed from.
Right. Otherwise, it's medical waste and it's disposed of.
Correct. And I asked to keep this. I actually photographed it, but the doctor was extremely adamant about me keeping it. And he said he wanted to send it to pathology to have it examined, and then it would be returned to me. And then I never saw it again. I called many times. I went back. They wouldn't return it to me. They said it was just a mucoid formation. But you can clearly see in the photograph that was taken live right out of me and on the table, out of my jaw. And my mother was right there watching as my witness. And there was clearly something majorly wrong to be so. The doctor was mad. The more I challenged him to keep this object that was removed from my jaw, the more angry he became, to the point where he had to use his authority and say, "That's it. I'm keeping it. It's going to pathology. That's it. No further discussion.
All right. So now, you've shown these photographs to let's call them experts in this arena, those people that are familiar with electronic torture and targeted individuals. Have you shown these pictures that you think are biochips and biomedical devices? And if so, what have they said?
Yeah, every person that I know that knows about these illegal biomedical implants recognizes that this is clearly something that is not natural. It's not part of the human body. It's not part of nature. There was one of the images I sent you is an MRI before it was removed, and you can clearly see four white, dense objects in my lower jaw. This being one of the ones that was removed, I now have three left just in my jaw alone. But everyone who's looked at it, to answer your question, has agreed that it is definitely what something of what these devices look like. They're completely encapsulated. They have their own power source that's a battery that is actually believed to be charged by the person who it's embedded in, and it's activated by frequencies, either microwave frequency, electromagnetic frequency, or radio frequency, and for the people are like, well, why would somebody do that? It's for the sole purpose of trauma-induced behavior modification. So they're actually, instead of saying something like mind control, this electronic harassment, as they refer to it as, is actually changing slowly, subtly over time, what is believed to be a person's urges, emotions. If you can control somebody's emotions and their urges and their tendencies, then over time, you can actually control the person's thoughts and change their thoughts forever.
Now, the million-dollar question, of course, and I always ask this, and I usually get the same answer, which is, I have no idea. But why do you suspect you're being targeted? You're a chef. You don't have state secrets. You weren't working for military-industrial company. Why you?
Right. Well, I can tell you, I've talked to hundreds of targeted individuals, and I know for sure that I can pretty much bet that I am just an experiment for the government. I represent some sophisticated form of an experiment in which they're testing this extremely advanced nanotechnology on human beings. It's the greatest, the biggest crime against humanity ever, human experimentation in the worst sense of it, being used. I am actually being used as a guinea pig or a lab rat by comparison.
Are you able to pinpoint roughly, well, that's a contradiction. Are you able to pinpoint when these devices were implanted? In other words, you have a record of missing time.
Yes. Yes, I definitely know exactly when I was taken in what can only be described as a military abduction from my apartment, from several different apartments in Hollywood, California, where I was living at the time. And one time I was taken at night and returned, what I thought was the next morning, I was returned back to my room, and an entire week had gone by, and I remembered bits and pieces of it. And just to put things in proper perspective, from the amount of terror that a target experiences, to put it in proper perspective, if Hollywood were able to accurately capture and portray this crime in a film, it would make the scariest movie ever made, The Exorcist, look like a children's bedtime story by comparison.
Well, a couple of years ago, I shot a pilot for the Discovery Network in the U.S. On this very topic, and I don't know, quite frankly, if that pilot will ever air. There was some suggestion it might air this fall, but I'm not holding my breath at this point. You know better than most how Hollywood works and
yeah.
how and what happens to pilots and so forth. However, we did a pilot. Dr. John Hall and I participated in this pilot, and it was a damn good program. And we were really hoping that it might get picked up for a series because I think it would have done a lot of good. But what struck me in speaking with victims... and one of them was a gentleman in Seattle who had other issues. It was clear he had a drug habit. It was clear that there were some mental health issues. However, when that happens, when you're confronted with an individual who has these other issues, that to me does not discount the veracity of their story. Because my understanding is that these perps, whoever they are, will often pick someone who has been compromised in some way, because they'll never be believed.
That's correct. That's correct. They often will pick somebody who, as you said, has some kind of either an alcohol or a substance abuse problem, because automatically they're going to be less credible. And certainly by any law enforcement or family members that know them well enough, they know all the ins and outs of these people, and so when something horrific like this happens to them, they simply refuse to believe it, no matter what.
What's going on in your family? Have you been ostracized? Are your parents, your family members supportive? Do they believe you?
I have one member of my family who... Most of them, as you said, most of the people. What happens is I cannot even talk about quote unquote it anymore. Family members do not want to hear about it, and therefore, it's best for targeted individuals not to even discuss it, because even if you're able to convince someone, it doesn't do you any good. It doesn't stop anything from happening. And there's nothing they can do anyway. It's beyond their ability to believe. I have to say,
and it is. You have to understand. You have to sympathize almost. It is almost too incredible to believe, isn't it?
Well, it's too incredible to believe. But it's also the fact that this crime, in order to make it happen, it's just a smaller piece of the puzzle. But it's so sophisticated in nature that it involves every aspect of science, neuroscience, physics.
Agreed. Listen, got to jump out here and take a break, Michael. We'll be back. Michael
okay.
Fitzhugh Bell, The Invisible Crime, Illegal Microchip Implants and Microwave Technology and Their Use Against Humanity. Back with more of The Conspiracy Show. Stay with us. Welcome back. Michael Fitzhugh Bell, my guest, a long time victim of electronic torture, mind control, and the author of The Invisible Crime. And again, on the Google Hangout on air, the Hangout on air stream, there's a slideshow playing. If you happen to be on there, you can see these images. One of the things that strikes me now as I'm looking at the scar tissue, these artifacts that have been removed from your body, is the similarity between your story and other targeted individual stories, and the whole alien abduction phenomenon. And I'm wondering whether you've ever thought about the parallels, because, of course, one of the theories about the alien abduction phenomenon is that it is the alien abduction is some sort of a psyop or a cover story. In other words, these people who think they've been abducted by aliens, this is a memory that's been inserted into their mind, and that technology exists. I mean, I've read about this at MIT. So that they think they've been abducted by aliens, but in fact they have been abducted and implanted in the same manner that you have, and countless of you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of other people. Have you thought about that?
Yes, I did. That crossed my mind briefly, but I have what's called a photographic memory, and even though I was drugged, I still remember bits and pieces, and I know it was people. It was human beings that took me, and it was probably members of the government or the military. That did cross my mind, and I believe that perhaps, as you said, that sometimes that may be a cover story that is given to people to believe that they were actually taken by aliens when it was really just the government using them as experiments and then passing it off as this science fiction to cover themselves and to get away again and always stay in the clear and never get caught, as the government always seems to manage to do.
What is happening with you right now? I mean, are you able to alleviate or get out from under any of these effects? Do you sleep in a Faraday cage or anything like that?
I do use countermeasures. I do use magnets, neodymium magnets. I have devoted a whole chapter to that in the book. I do use several different methods of shielding, and they do help, whatever methods I've used. They do help to some degree, but nothing completely eliminates it. These frequencies are what I believe to be. There are microwave, there could be electromagnetic, radio, but I believe that the frequencies being used on me are military frequencies that are too high or too low on the scale to actually be measured by any conventional equipment. Any electronics expert, they don't even make equipment to measure this type of technology. So and also this technology that's being used on me, the directed energy, is actually considered to be a weapon of mass destruction. That's how advanced and how sophisticated, as I was just saying before we went to break, this involves every aspect of physics, psychology, mathematics, and all of human knowledge, including war tactics and techniques, are all involved in this crime.
I wanted to read this email very quickly. Chris in Toronto writes, "Hello, Richard, longtime listener. I have to question the claims of a shadow government blacklisting people." That referred to a letter I received from a woman who believes she's being targeted in South Carolina. He writes, "I have been poking the bear for 16 years and have never seen any of this electronic torture. I would think that myself, the perfect snuff movie actor with no family or friends, so no one would miss me, would be a prime candidate for such a program, if it existed. I believe a lot of what your show and others present, but this one seems unlikely. And having spent time in shelters and on the streets, I've seen a few guys that have claimed this but have proved to be unstable individuals, usually on some medication that they are not taking. One guy was convinced the police were aliens and they came from the North Pole, hence the name Police, Pole Ice, in other words. After months listening to his circular thought process, and it was a small circle, it became obvious he was, quote, end quote, nuts. Just my nickel's worth. Keep up the good work, Chris in Toronto." Okay, I can tell you what's going to happen immediately following this show, Michael, and I'm going to get a deluge of emails and maybe a few voicemails saying, "How could you have this poor person on the air who is obviously delusional, suffering from some mental health issue, and I'll be accused of exploiting you?" This happened the last time we had you on the program. What do you say to people who, Chris, who writes this email, and others who say, "This is not happening. Poor Michael is obviously mentally ill"?
Well, I'm sure that's what it's. It's the perfect crime in that sense, in that it covers its own tracks, that the person won't be believed, they'll be discredited, that the crime leaves so little evidence. The evidence that I did have, you see, I did have something removed from me. It was very difficult to have that removed, and then once I got it removed, it was immediately taken away from me. There's a reason for that. Otherwise, they would have just let me keep it. And anyone who doesn't believe it, it's because the sophistication of this crime, it's really a weapon system. is what it is. Is an I'm an experiment. In the future, it's a long-range goal to, and right now, it's being used on hundreds of thousands of targeted individuals around the world.
Of that, I have no doubt. Of that, I have no doubt.
But the grand plan is to scale this to the entire population.
So one day, we will all be a targeted individual. Maybe the next
term will be targeted neighborhoods. Yeah, the people that are non-targets today can become victims tomorrow.
Okay, got to take another break, Michael. Stay put. We'll come back. Richard Serrett, The Conspiracy Show, Michael Fitzhugh Bell, targeted individual. Back with more. Stay with us. Michael Fitzhugh Bell stays with us here on the program for a few moments yet. Michael, what about voice-to-skull technology? Do you hear voices?
No, I actually, there are two different formats for this, the electronic harassment. One is the V2K, which is a proven technology, and the other is also another proven to exist technology, which I get called silent subliminal sound presentation, which is a very high-pitched ringing, almost like a tinnitus that I hear 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it changes in pitch. Sometimes it gets louder, sometimes it gets lower, but I do not hear any voices, although I know most of the people that I know that are targeted individuals do hear the voices. I get this silent subliminal sound presentation, and that is actually also another proven declassified government technology. All of these technologies were created by the government, and obviously for a reason. And as I was saying before, it's being scaled, the capabilities, to the entire population for the reasons of control and power and money.
You mentioned tinnitus. My good friend Dr. John Hall, who I believe is one of the leading experts in this field, and he examines outside
yes,
of...
Yes, I know him.
Right, of course.
Yes.
It would make sense that you would. Now, he tells me, Dr. Hall tells me, that often the voice-to-skull will begin as tinnitus. And tinnitus is very common. I mean, a lot of people suffer from it. I know many people who have tinnitus. It begins often as tinnitus, and then almost as if the perps are trying to determine, you know, the right frequency or however that works, and then that tinnitus eventually, at some point, becomes full-blown voice to skull. But in your case, you're saying that it presents as sort of a tinnitus, and it sort of remained there at that level.
That's correct. It's the sound that you would hear of a frequency. Maybe the sound of the only thing I can compare it to is the humming of old-fashioned fluorescent light bulbs, like those long bulbs that make that buzzing sound.
Right.
Similar to that.
Are you hearing it all the time, 24/7?
All the time.
And
sometimes it's louder than others.
And if you were to step inside a Faraday cage or have some sort of shielding device, does it stop then?
I have not had the pleasure of stepping inside one of those Faraday cages before, but I have had feedback come off of my ears before from both a bullhorn. If I put a bullhorn up to my ear, you'll get loud feedback, or also in an airplane using a Bose headphones, when I push the headphones into my ears, a loud high-pitched squeal can be heard, feedback coming from me, from the as a reaction with the microphone or whatever's in the headphone on the when I was on the plane, and the person next to me, I'm like, can you hear that? And they're like, what is that? I'm like, you know, I didn't want to tell them what it was.
Well, that's interesting that you would have that on a plane, because what is the cabin of a or the fuselage of a jet airliner if not a Faraday cage?
Right. You'd think that there would be a break in the signal, but never. Never a break in a plane. I have talked to people that have actually been, I know a person now that says that he has been in a tunnel, a rock tunnel, and in the deepest part of it, actually, everything shut off. He was far enough down where he wasn't bothered, and he gets the V2K. He hears the voices, and he said actually everything was silent. He felt relaxed the way he used to feel before this happened to him. And I haven't been there. It's a cave. He's going to take me at some point. And I'd like to experience that too, but I have not had noticed any difference under any circumstances.
What about Roger Tolsis from Bug Sweeps in Los Angeles? Have you been in consultation with him, and has he offered?
I did. Roger's a friend of mine, and I initially saw him as a client, and he measured frequencies coming off of me, and I got a report from him. He's very familiar with what is described by every targeted individual that I know. And several of the targets that I know have actually been to Roger also. That's how he put me in touch with them initially.
And have you been down to San Antonio to see Dr. Hall?
I did. I went to San Antonio to visit with him. When I was there to have another extraction done on my navel, on my stomach, and I met him when I was there during that time that I was in San Antonio, and this time I had irrefutable medical evidence of a frequency emitting from my navel and a scar there, and I went to have it removed, and under only local anesthesia, not general, I was awake. They opened me up and they closed me back up again and did nothing to me. They didn't remove anything, although I had ultrasound and MRIs showing something that was there. They claimed that they couldn't find anything. What I think would happen is between the time that I first went to see the surgeon and the time that I actually had the surgery, I believe that the government stepped in and spoke to him and probably threatened him that he was going to lose his practice if he did anything to help me. And if he did anything to remove me, they probably threatened his family. I don't know, but the surgeon opened me up and closed me back up and did nothing. And I was awake for the entire procedure.
Where do you go from here, Michael? I mean, how do you endure this? How do you keep going?
Well, that's a good question. I live now to spread the word to other people. The only way to get this terrible crime to stop is by raising people's awareness around the globe. As I was saying before, non-targets, people that are not affected by this crime today that they're aware of, can become victims tomorrow. And especially people who go and get elective and cosmetic surgeries provides a wonderful opportunity to be implanted, or the other way of that people are getting, the other way that Dr. John Hall believes, is that people are having their brain frequency scanned and then read their actual resonance, their resonance frequency. Every person gives off a different brain frequency, much like a fingerprint. Everyone's is unique. Once that is measured, and this is what's widely believed, and fed and calibrated into a supercomputer, then fed to a satellite, then this is what his book was about, Satellite Terrorism in America. And by taking a person's resonance frequency, which emanates naturally from their brain, they can actually target a person from anywhere on Earth, anywhere that they are, at any time.
Is that what they call remote neural monitoring?
Correct. That is the correct terminology.
My word, what they have at their disposal. You know, I was speaking recently, hosting Coast to Coast last night, and I had Joseph Farrell on my program, who has written extensively over the years about this post-war Nazi empire and the trillions now they have at their disposal to pour into black ops. And you think about whoever's responsible, but you think about the money that has been poured into black ops, the technology that they would have at their disposal. I remember speaking with someone at Sony in the R&D. This was about 15 years ago. In the research and development department, and he said that we have stuff sitting on the shelves gathering dust because we've determined it the public is not ready for it yet. So, and you go back to people like Ben Rich, who was the director at Skunk Works at Lockheed Martin, saying, you know, we have things sitting in hangars in the desert that are 50 years beyond your wildest imagination.
That's right.
I just throw that out there for people who think this can't be happening, the technology doesn't exist.
Well, to know the truth, first you must know the lie.
True enough.
And that is the lie that's being perpetrated by the government to cover up their advancements and their greed for power and control, and it's frightening to think how far it's gone. And as you said, whatever we're seeing now, they're already 50 years or 60 years ahead of what they're allowing to be out there. Nothing comes on the market without going through the government first. There's no miracles that are coming out there. Any new technologies are technologies that the government is done with, and now they're ready to make money on it. All the newest stuff we won't see for another 50 years.
And you need to get the ear if you haven't already done so. I mean, you're sitting there in Hollywood, and if memory serves, you've done some screenwriting, have you not?
Correct, I have. I've tried my hand at screenwriting and...
What I was going to say is you need to get the ear of someone like an Oliver Stone. We need an Oliver Stone movie to really blow this thing wide open the way he did for JFK. It was Oliver Stone's JFK that started the release of many of those documents by
right.
Congress. So he needs to do the same thing for targeted individuals.
Yeah, if Hollywood got a hold of it and did it the right way, it would blow everyone's mind, and it would be presented the way it deserves to be presented instead of just in bits and pieces and not delivered as a whole, which would really needs to be done.
Well, Michael, you're a hero. I applaud your efforts, and just enduring what you've endured and still be alive, you're a hero. And I appreciate
you're nice to say that.
I appreciate you spending some time with us.
Well, thank you for having me on the show for a second time, Richard. It's really nice to be back with you. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, listen, stay in touch. Tell us from time to time. Drop in. Tell us how you're doing. And again, the book is The Invisible Crime, Illegal Microchip Implants and the Microwave Technology and Their Use Against Humanity. Michael Fitzhugh Bell, A True Story. All right. The portal for The Conspiracy Show is, of course, richardserrett.com, but that will soon change. It'll be Strange Planet. I'll let you know when we switch things over. In the meantime, say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett, and as always, follow the truth.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Live from Toronto, Canada, Earth. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett on Zoomer Radio.
Thanks for inviting me into your home, your long-haul truck, your camper, RV, your cabin in the woods. And a special hello to those of you listening in on our flagship station, AM 740 Zoomer Radio, online at zoomerradio.ca. Now, this is cool. In a few weeks, this program will also be simulcast on Zoomer's new FM transmitter here in Toronto. So if you have trouble picking up the show on AM 740 in the downtown core because of all the overhead wires and the steel and glass condos and office buildings, relax, because in just a few short weeks you're going to be able to listen to this program and others on Zoomer Radio on our new 96.7 FM frequency. a new transmitter or transmission, again, within the city. And that'll be launching very soon in September. I don't have an exact date yet, but that is great news. A hearty how-do to all of you listening in on one of our U.S. affiliates, and special thanks to Chris Whitting and the whole team at Syndication Networks. All of you all over the world listening in on the podcast. It is everywhere, through iTunes, Podbay, Stitcher Radio. Of course, the Conspiracy Show app, which is available as a free download at the Google Store and iTunes. Wait till you get a load of this app, if you haven't already. It is amazing. A very sophisticated piece of technology. And thanks again to Sharon Forster for that. So wherever and however you are listening, I welcome you. Just a reminder, we are doing an HOA, a Hangout on Air, which for the uninitiated, it means we're streaming the show on YouTube in real time. So it's radio with video. So if you want to see my sorry face and enormous head, go to my Twitter feed, at Richard Serrett. And at the top or near the top of the Twitter feed, you'll find a link to the HOA. You just click on it and you're in. You're in the inner sanctum. So much going on. I want to carve out a little time in the next few weeks to discuss Donald Trump. Love him or hate him, this is a watershed moment in U.S. history, maybe global history. And I really believe about 90%, maybe 99% of the pundits on mainstream media are missing the point of Donald Trump entirely. It's not about illegal immigration and building a wall and repealing the 14th Amendment. What he has managed to do in just a few short months is break the establishment's control over the nomination process. He has smashed it into a million pieces. He doesn't need George Soros money or the Koch brothers. He doesn't have to go hat in hand to big pharma or insurance companies or the lobbyists. He is entirely without baggage. He's not for sale. Again, you may loathe what comes out of his mouth, but what he is doing is hugely significant. And I have to say, because of this, I'm worried about his safety. He has the unelected oligarchs, the equestrian class, and that includes the owners of the mainstream media. He has them apoplectic. They are apoplectic. And some of them will stop at nothing to prevent someone like the Donald from assuming the reins of power. So in maybe 2-3 weeks, we'll do a half hour on or an hour on that. We also have September 13th fast approaching. Not just another date on the calendar. For those of you who have read Rabbi Jonathan Cahn's books, The Harbinger and The Mystery of the Shemitah, and he's been on the program a number of times, and I consider him now to be a friend and a bit of a spiritual advisor, you know the significance of that day if you follow Rabbi Cahn. I believe September 13th corresponds with the 29th of Elul on the Hebrew calendar. And this marks the end of a, is it the end or the beginning of a seven-year cycle that is mentioned in the Bible? And these seven-year cycles, or Shemitahs, are often accompanied by cataclysms, financial, man-made, natural. The stock market crashes of 1929, 30, 1987, 2001, and 2007 and 8 all happened during one of these Shemitahs. In and around the 29th of Elul. All right, so that's all upcoming. Hey, did you read about Morgan Freeman, his step-granddaughter? About a week ago, horrible story. His granddaughter was fatally stabbed, and it was being reported in the New York Post and elsewhere that her longtime boyfriend, Lamar Davenport, killed her, stabbed her, in what was described as an attempted exorcism, because some witness apparently overheard him saying, "Get out, devils, I cast you out, devils, in the name of Jesus Christ, I cast you out," as he was murdering this poor girl. Now, he's been arraigned, and he's being held in a psychiatric facility for observation. Based on what I've read, this sounds like a drug-induced, drug-fueled rampage. Nothing to do with exorcisms and demonic possession. But whenever, you'll notice, whenever these tragedies pop up in the news, it casts a spotlight on this ritual of exorcism. And it is a ritual, and it is a sacrament. And for the record, I believe that demonic possession is real. I really do, absolutely. That's where we're going for the next 40 minutes. Archbishop and Chief Exorcist of the Catholic Ministry, Archbishop Ron Fail, is here to discuss demonic possessions, poltergeist activity, and the symptoms of personal hauntings, and how the clergy and exorcist investigators deal with this problem and may be able to help. He is the presiding bishop and chief exorcist of the Order of Exorcists since 1981. That's a long time. The Order of Exorcists is under the independent Old Roman Catholic jurisdiction of the Sacred Order of St. Michael, the Archangel, independent from the Vatican in Rome. The only connection is the I'll let him to explain what this is, but it was issued by the Roman Catholic Magisterium in the year 2000 and signed by Pope John Paul II on June the 16th, Joseph Cardinal Ratzinger on August 6th, which states, the churches which not existing in perfect communion with the Roman Catholic Church remain united to her by means of the closest bounds, that is by apostolic succession and a valid Eucharist, are true particular churches. So in other words, this is, I guess, sort of a sect of the Catholic Church, but not officially in union with the Vatican. But there is they maintain a relationship. That all being said, let's welcome Archbishop Ron Fail to The Conspiracy Show. Hello, Archbishop. How are you?
Yes, hello. How are you? I'm just fine, actually.
Very well. Thank you. And I appreciate you joining us again. And there you are on our Hangout on Air. I'm glad you joined us. And this is your second time on the program. For those, I kind of muddled that up, but explain exactly what the connection is between the, your organization and the Vatican.
Well, our only connection with the Vatican in Rome is that we have apostolic successions that go through the Roman Church. And because it does, we are recognized, our sacraments are recognized, our rituals and so on, as being valid. So we may not be directly under the Vatican, but we are a traditional old Roman Catholic organization. And we practice all the sacraments, and of course, we also perform exorcisms,
right,
when needed,
and as does the Vatican. I mean, the Vatican has a chief exorcist, so this isn't a schism between the old Roman Catholic Church and the Vatican based on this particular ritual, because it exists in both the Catholic Church and the old Catholic Church. Correct?
Yeah, that's very true. You know, I receive lots of criticism because we're not directly under the Vatican. And as such, I'm called all kinds of names, from being a fraud to a phony to a fake and all these other terrible, horrible names. All I could say is that we've been doing this for, well, almost 40 years now. And as a result, we've helped thousands of people who have reached out asking for our assistance and the thing that we do.
Was I correct in describing exorcism as a sacrament? Is it officially one of the sacraments?
It is. And it's interesting because as more and more people get more aware of the actual ritual of exorcism, many, many questions keep coming up. You mentioned Morgan Freeman and his step-granddaughter who was stabbed several times. And from what I read, it was her boyfriend kept shouting and saying something to the effect, "I cast you out, devils. I cast you out in the name of Jesus Christ." And he kept stabbing her and stabbing her until she was dead. That's horrible.
Absolutely.
And everyone's concept of exorcism is totally and completely different. I suppose it's based on your belief systems. But we use the Roman ritual in all our ceremonies when it comes to
exorcisms, but we don't just do an exorcism because someone has asked us and has informed us that they have some form of demonic attachment or possession. You know, we have to see the proof. So we have a very analytical approach, and as such, we have this organization in place.
I've mentioned this before on the air, but I think it's appropriate to mention so again. A couple of years ago on my television program, I believe it was our first season, we did an episode on demonic possession, and I traveled to Yonkers, New York, and I met there a New York State-certified psychiatrist who claims that he, well, I it's more than a claim. I mean, I think the evidence is there that he documented what he called, again, this is a board-certified psychiatrist, documented what he called an authentic case of demonic possession. He had a patient who did not respond to any of the traditional medications or sort of psychiatric methods for treating what he thought initially was a disorder, and he eventually concluded it was an authentic case of demonic possession. A Catholic priest, an exorcist, agreed with that assessment after their lengthy investigation. But they are exceedingly rare. Would you agree with that, Archbishop?
Yes. They're very rare. You know, the unfortunate thing is that most people, they misdiagnose a situation by jumping in and wanting to perform a ritual almost immediately without hearing and receiving all the facts. Our organization, we use a very analytical approach. Even before we perform any rituals, we do an in-depth investigation. And we have people in our organization that do just that. We call them our lead investigators. And they go out and they will actually do the first contact on our behalf. And then they will do conduct an in-depth interview. And we have a 60 question questionnaire that we have our investigators follow. So we try to ascertain as much information as possible.
All right, we'll take a time out. When we come back, we'll talk about, without mentioning names, obviously, we'll talk about some authentic, quote-unquote, cases of demonic possession you've been involved with. We'll talk about perhaps some of the signs that a loved one may in fact be possessed and what can be done about it. Archbishop Ron Fail, the presiding bishop and chief exorcist of the Order of Exorcists since 1981, is right here on The Conspiracy Show. My name is Richard Serrett. Don't go away. All right, Archbishop Ron Fail stays with us. We are talking about exorcism. He is the presiding bishop and chief exorcist at the Order of Exorcists. And on the website, Archbishop, I see you are recruiting. You are looking for new exorcists. From what sort of field do you draw upon? Are you looking for seminarians or other priests?
What we're doing is we're recruiting people from around the world. And as for clergy, we are looking for Catholic clergy from any jurisdiction who has permission, if they're a priest, from their bishops to join our organization. We're more of an association, if anything else. And when we have a case that's assigned, or rather when a case comes in, I assign the case to a particular group of investigators. They investigate and collect as much evidence as possible regarding the case. If it shows that there's a demonic involvement, and then at that point, if it's a possession, we request the physical and psychological examinations. Once those come in, we submit those to our doctors. We have three physicians, two of them are psychiatrists, and they review the reports with their recommendations, and at that point, I would assign the case to the to the city where the case has originated from. I would contact the bishop, and the bishop in that jurisdiction would contact one of his priests who he has appointed as an exorcist to actually perform the ritual. He would go out and join the investigation team there at the location and actually perform the ritual.
The fact that you are recruiting suggests that this is a growing problem.
Yes, it is. In fact, we're seeing so many cases are coming in from around the world that we don't have enough priests or investigators to cover the cases. So there's quite a few people that we're not able to help. At the present time, we're in 24 countries and 17 U.S. states. But we need a lot more. There's like 290 countries in the world. We're receiving requests from Jamaica, from Jerusalem, from Greece. We have no clergy in those countries. We need clergy in Russia. We need them all over the world, actually. And then we need to have investigators to do the actual demonic investigation and assessment on our behalf. And once the reports are submitted, then we could take it from there. So we're looking for experienced lead. They could be lead paranormal investigators who have experience in collecting information and who are open to receive our training in our process of demonic investigation and assessment. If they're willing to do that, willing to join our organization, then we would train them. We train them for a year-round training. We ask them to help support us by paying for a $65 membership fee for the whole year, and then their training is free. And, of course, since we're a nonprofit organization, that's the only support we receive.
I'm guessing that exorcism is not a is not for the frail. Do you have to be young and in good shape in order to perform an exorcism?
You have to be called by God to do this
certainly,
type of ministry.
Yes,
it's a
certainly.
Specialty.
Yes, but above
not
and beyond
everyone,
that.
Not everyone, not every priest, bishop can actually do this ritual unless they're truly called by God. This is a specialty, as I said. And once they have that calling, then they would seek the training. If they're a priest, they have to have their bishop contact us, and the bishop has to be willing to appoint their priest as the exorcist for that particular jurisdiction / diocese. If that be the case, then we would receive the priest into our order. We would train them in demonic assessment, and the priest would only get involved in these cases when we need them to perform the actual ritual. All the work is basically done, all the investigation work and reports that are submitted are done by our lead investigators and their teams. And then that's who we rely on. So our organization compiles of clergy and laity. The laity are our investigators. They're the ones that do the first contact and submit the reports to us to see whether or not we have a valid case.
Right. The spiritual component, obviously, you know, that has to be there. But I guess what I was asking was, when an exorcist encounters someone who is possessed, and I'm going from descriptions that I've had from exorcists, but also, you know, what's in the popular culture, in the movies and so forth, I would think that someone involved in an exorcist, you know, would be called upon to physically restrain someone who's possessed. I mean, again, this is not for the frail or weak.
Well, actually, taking this from a genuine, authentic point of view, an exorcism is not done and that ritual is done as a last resort. We have to make sure that we have the evidence in place. The people that will be present will be the investigators of that team along with the clergy. The clergy is never alone. The clergy is always with at least 4 to 5 different team members that will be there present. The person who is possessed, and this is once we have sufficient evidence that there is a true demonic possession and we are not dealing with a psychosis, then once we know and we have the evidence, then we will do what we have to do to perform the ritual. The victim is bound to the bed or bound to the chair, and we make sure that the victim is secure, because all types of things could happen. If the person is truly possessed by the demonic, the person may show incredible strength. They may show incredible abilities to do things that would fall under the supernatural. And I'm not just talking about things flying around in the room, because that happens anyway. But I'm talking about the ability where they could try to deceive not only the clergy that is performing the ritual, but try to deceive everyone in the room, and would pick somebody in the room and start talking to that individual as if the demon knew that individual on a first name basis, and would tell all its secrets, and then it would look for the weakest link in the room, and it will go after that person. The demonic is very aggressive, but even before it shows itself and it shows its physical manifestation through the body of the person that's being possessed, it will first try to hide itself. It doesn't want anyone to see it. It doesn't even want you to know that it's there. In fact, it will do anything and everything it can to convince you that the person is okay, that there's no reason to have this ritual. There's no reason to have the company of our investigators and our clergy. It will try to convince everyone in the room that it's perfectly okay. And this is how it would deceive. It does lots of deceiving, lots of lying, and lots of misdirection. It will try to take your attention away from the task at hand by having things fly around in the room, by having other things that would take place that would definitely take your mind off what you're trying to do. You know, when performing this ritual, the clergy has to be extremely focused. And the people around or in the presence in the room, which in most cases would be the investigators, they too have to be on point. And they have to not try to be distracted, because the demonic will try to distract you.
Oh, yes. Have you witnessed...
Result, people could get hurt.
Yes.
As you probably read my story a couple of years ago, I was physically attacked by demonic entities as I was performing a ritual of exorcism. It landed me in the hospital for a month. I was in intensive care, and after three operations, I still have the residual effect as to what took place in that particular situation. Right now, my physical exterior is declining. My hearing loss is also very evident. I hear this constant ringing in my ears, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, can't sleep. It's very hard for me to concentrate on exactly what I'm doing. Fortunately, in our organization, I have a lot of wonderful, dedicated people that are willing to step up. If we need an exorcism to take place in Washington, we have people in Washington. If we need in New York, we have people in New York. If we need an exorcism or an investigation for an assessment done in the UK, we have people there. We have people in Poland. We have people in Africa. We have people in India. All these people are tied into our organization.
Right.
Once I receive the request from someone who either sees a show such as yours, or maybe some of our bulletins that are on Facebook or other material on the Internet, they would contact us, and I would receive the request. And then at that point, I would see who I have in that particular city, state, or country. At that point, I would make the assignment to the lead exorcist, or rather to the lead investigator for that particular town.
Okay, I want to, if I could jump in here, Archbishop, I want to ask you a couple of pointed questions. One, I need you to sort of separate Hollywood mythos from reality. Do victims of demonic possession, and have you witnessed victims of demonic possession, levitate?
Oh, yes, of course. I've been doing this for like 37 years. A long time. In those 37 years, I've seen this happen at least a half a dozen times, where people have actually raised, their entire body actually raised from the bed. I've actually seen the bed elevate a couple of feet with witnesses. You know, the room is filled with witnesses. We have our investigators. We have everyone, you know, at point and witnessing these events.
How about...
That's only the tip of the iceberg.
Now,
everything you see in the movies, okay, that's done for entertainment value. But what really goes behind closed doors in a real exorcism, you will never see.
You will
never see, because it's just not meant for it to be seen by anyone except the people who are directly involved.
Understood. Should we attribute, or can we attribute, the rise in demonic activity and the need? As you say, you're recruiting new exorcists. There's a problem here. Is there a problem? Because, I mean, obviously, you can't turn on a television half the shows now, it seems, on cable networks are devoted. This program is devoted to this sort of thing, but we're trying to raise awareness here. You can't turn on the TV without seeing programs, you know, zombies and ghost hauntings and ghost hunting shows. The proliferation of Ouija boards, they're sold as toys in department stores. Is the fact that this activity is being reflected in the culture, in pop culture, is that giving rise to an increase in genuine demonic activity?
Yes, of course. Demonic influence is all around us. It's on the internet, it's on TV, it's on the radio, it's on in a regular media, social media, of course. But you see, the thing is, it's gradually, there's a gradual delivery system. You won't even know that it's of a demonic influence. You'll just simply accept it as part of your environment, part of what you're going through in life. Demonic oppression, for example, that occurs, and it's such a delicate, soft, slow process. The person wouldn't even know that the thought that was implanted in his mind was from an outside source other than his own. As a result, these demonic influence, these ideas will come into a person's head. It's all around us. There's no escaping it. It's all part of the scenario. And the whole thing is that most of the people who are skeptics and who will not believe, they will probably be the first ones that will be touched by the demonic in some fashion. And they will never know that it was actually done or from the demonic. They would think it's just something that just happens to be in their life, and as a result, they have to deal with it. Little do they know that this is the whole plan of Satan, is to attack us in so many different fashions. You know, I talked about demonic possession, but there's also demonic oppression. There's demonic infestation, which is another very common, more common than possession. And that's where the demonics have the realm of a space, house. And as a result, you know, they will be in that house. Some people may view it as a haunting, but the reality is it could be perhaps maybe invited in by some, either intentionally or unintentionally through a Ouija board, maybe through some other means of opening that door. And as a result, they welcome the demonic into their space.
All right.
Once
we'll take
that happens, they have all kinds of problems.
We will take a timeout. We'll come back. Archbishop Ron Fail is here talking about the Holy Sacrament of Exorcism and demonic possession. We'll talk about some specific cases when we come back. My name is Richard Serrett, and you are listening to The Conspiracy Show. Welcome back. Archbishop Ron Fail is with us, and the Order of Exorcists are building an army of God. They are recruiting exorcists, and you can find out more details at the website, www.orderofexorcists.com. Richard Gallagher, Dr. Richard E. Gallagher was the name of the psychiatrist. His name escaped me, but I met with him in New York State. He described this case of an authentic demonic possession, and he put me in touch. This is a very secretive meeting we had. He put me in touch with the attending exorcist who was in New York City. So one night, around midnight, I get this call from New York City, and it was the priest, the exorcist, on the other end of the line. The first order of business before we started talking about this case was he said this prayer. He said, you know, when you start talking about these things, you open yourselves up to a potential oppression or possession. And so he thought it was important to begin our conversation with a prayer. The fact that you and I are talking about this and people are listening to this, is there any danger, Archbishop?
Of course. There's dangers all around us. We don't have to be talking about it. The danger's still there. The demonic is always here with us.
But specifically, do we increase the danger? Do we increase the risk by discussing it, this conversation?
The risk was increased when you were born into this world. And then from that point on, you've been exposed to it. The evil of this world has been existing from the beginning of time, before the time anyone was born, and will continue to be here until God finally ends this whole battle, if you will. This battle has been going on for the longest time, And the dialogue we're having now, the more you understand and acknowledge the fact that the demonic does exist, yes, you're going to be open to it. Yes, you're going to probably see things you've never seen before. But in the same token, that's your cue to get close to God. Because with God, you could not only protect yourself, but you'll learn to survive in this battle of good versus evil.
Well, you said something I think is very important. You will see things you have never seen before. And this came to me again from Dr. Richard Gallagher, this psychiatrist, who said he was on the phone with this priest that I mentioned, talking about this particular case. The priest was in a remote location somewhere, I think, down in Florida and on vacation, and Dr. Gallagher was in his office in New York, and all of a sudden, during the conversation, this woman's voice interrupted. She was now on the phone with them. I mean, that's one of the supernatural things that you discussed. Can you share with our audience, and some of them are unbelieving, share some of the things that you have personally witnessed that would sort of fall into this category of the supernatural that involved a demonic possession?
Okay, first of all, the story you just told is a common one. It does happen to us who are in this ministry. I was on the phone, this was like 6 months ago, I was on the phone with one of our priests from back east, and we were talking about a case that he was working on, him and his team, and as a result, as we're talking, somebody actually interrupted as if we were talking on a third-party line and started talking to us and calling us by our first names. We never use first names, by the way. You know, I'm Archbishop File. This is Father so-and-so. We never use first names. This person comes on the line, calls us by our first names, and starts talking about the case. Now, at that point, you know, I was stunned for about 30 seconds, and so was the priest I was talking with. And so I stopped the individual and said, "Who is this? You know, and how did you get on this line? You know, because this isn't a party line." And it just broke right in. And its voice, again, you know, as you see in the Hollywood movies, you know, with the deep, growling voice. Well, that's exactly was the voice that was on the phone. And it's so funny because it started talking about details about the case that we were discussing. And again, we did not discuss any details as to what the particular case was over the phone. It's, you know, all our cases are confidential. They're not open for public display. So as a result, the only people that are familiar with what is going on or what's taking place in the case would be the investigators and, of course, the clergy. And so this person just went on and on, and then he started using profanity, and at that point, the priest, Becky, and I decided to just hang up, and that's exactly what we did. That's just one situation, and that's not the first time that's happened, but that was the first time that we were identified by our first names. And this person started talking as if he knew us, as if he knew what we had for breakfast. It was just incredible the way he just basically just went into the conversation.
Let me share another story from Dr. Gallagher, the psychiatrist, again dealing with this patient who had been involved in a satanic cult and in, you know, drug use and gang gang relations and so forth when she came to him. And this, again, was what he described as an authentic case of demonic possession. One night he was at home in his house with his wife, and his two cats started fighting on the foot of the bed. These were cats that had grown up with each other and had, lived very harmoniously in the house. All of a sudden now they were fighting. And I don't know if you people who have heard cats fighting, it's an ungodly sound. I mean, it's frightening, actually, to hear the sound of cats fighting. And he was very disturbed. The next day, he had an appointment with the same woman, and the first thing that she said to him was, "How did you like those cats last night?" Can you relate to that? Anything sort of similar happened to you?
Demonic possession is not only for, not only people are possessed by or can be open and possessed by the demonic, but also our animals can also be possessed, which means their behavior would be quite strange. No doubt, very aggressive, and that's very well known. It's a well known fact. But I would like to also share with you the thing that I do is I look at assessments. I look at what our investigators taped as they were doing a walkthrough and actually doing the actual demonic assessment. And then they send me their reports, and I review their CDs. I'm looking at the CD, and understand, the investigation was a month ago. And I'm looking at this assessment, and I do this in front of my computer. So I'm looking at my monitor, and I'm looking at all the action, and then I actually witness a demonic entity that actually took place, and it was actually part of the whole scenario. As I'm looking at the screen intensely, I felt a surge come from the keys of my computer. It threw me back to the back of my chair, and then I realized I had a stinging sensation. I lifted my shirt, and there was five fingers and a palm right on my side. Now, this was the same side that I was struck a couple of years ago when I was attacked by the demonic. It was my left side. I went to the hospital that evening and to find out, you know, if it was a blood clog. It just so happens that the shape was the palm of a hand.
Oh, my. Listen, I've got to jump in here, Archbishop. Apologies. We'll finish that story on the other side. Archbishop File is with us, presiding bishop and chief exorcist of the Order of Exorcists. They are building a God or an army for God. More details at orderofexorcists.com. Back with more of The Conspiracy Show. One of the stories we have up on the slide carousel at richardserrett.com is, Destination America, a.k.a. the network dedicated to all American entertainment, is going to host the first live televised exorcism in U.S. history, aptly titled Exorcism Live. That'll take place Friday, October the 30th, just in time for Halloween. It was announced Thursday at the Television Critics Association Summer Press Tour in Beverly Hills. Well, how about that? An exorcism. I'm sure, Archbishop, that doesn't sit well with you. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's Hollywood. That's all I have to say. It's Hollywood. It's sensationalizing something that is, of as it should be, a very private matter. This is a personal experience that an individual has to go through. It's the lowest point of their life. It is, they're actually walking through the shadows of death. They are being tormented physically, mentally. And as a result, to put it on TV, I think if it was genuine, I think it would be totally unheard of. I don't believe anyone who was truly possessed would even have knowledge or consent to something like that. I'm certainly sure the family members would never consent to that. I was reading a little bit about that program that's going to be on the 30th, and it's my understanding that it was going to be in the house where the actual case, where the movie was based on, The Exorcist.
Ah.
And I read further that they're going to do something in regards to performing an exorcism on a demonic structure, that is the house itself, not an individual or a person. Now, this is what I read. I could be off. I could be mistaken, but I believe that's the gist of it.
I can't imagine that anyone from the Catholic clergy would be involved, would be a participant in this television fiasco.
I don't believe so. I honestly, I read that there will be a psychic medium present.
Mm.
And there will be some other people basically representing, I believe, the New Age movement. In any case, I don't believe it's going to be of a Catholic / Christian ritual.
Right.
And it's not going to be on a personal possession case. It's going to be on the house. And that's what I read. Now,
okay.
I could be mistaken, but I just read that just a little while ago.
Archbishop, I wanted to ask you, I don't know if you have any knowledge of what's going on down in the city of Detroit. Recently, they unveiled a statue dedicated to, I'm not sure if it was Baphomet the god Baal, but they unveiled this demonic statue. In Detroit. And I was at a gathering recently. I'm told that a number of people came in from Detroit, and they say that there's all sorts of satanic activity going on in Detroit, satanic churches. What are you hearing? What do you know about what's going on in Detroit?
What's going on in Detroit is going on in every state of the Union. It's what's going on in Detroit is going in every country, if you will. Right now we have the advancement of watching it all take place through the Internet. We're able to see things that we never were able to see 50 years ago. As a result, we're seeing these things as if we're seeing it for the first time. The reality is that there always have been places where statues, satanic rituals, black masses have been performed in the United States as well as Canada and the UK. This is a common phenomenon that has taken place, and I'm going to say from the beginning of, beginning of time. So there's nothing special or unusual going on. This is all part of the demonic influence that I spoke about earlier. We're going to be seeing more and more of these things happen. And as we do, there's very little we could do about it. It's the sign of the times.
Someone is possessed, is there a point at which time they are too far gone? Let's say they have lived with this for 20, 30 years. Maybe they've been languishing in a some sort of a mental institution. People thought they were mentally ill. In fact, they were possessed. Is there a sort of a point of no return where that person is a lost cause?
I don't believe that God knows or even knows the term lost cause is. I believe everyone has the possibility of having the opportunity to be saved. If a person has been involved and has been tormented for 20, 30, 40 years and has been locked up in a mental institution, if the person has the ability, even briefly, to be elusive and say he wants help and request an organization such as ours, we would be there in a flash. And yes, that person can be helped.
But are there some cases...
They have to have the ability to say that they want to be helped.
Right, right. Are there cases that have taken more than... that have taken numerous attempts, numerous exorcisms to be performed in order for that person to be set free, if I can use that term?
Oh, yes, yes. We have a couple of cases now that have been worked on for a couple of years now. Part of the ritual is we have to... not only provoke the demonic entity that dwells within the person, but we have to have that person identify itself. The entity has to identify itself by name. And at that point, then we could work on that particular demonic entity. If it's a multiple possession where there's multiple demons, we have to do the ritual over and over and over again until we tire the demon out. When we wear the demon out to a point where where we put it in torment by the word of God, by using the sacraments that we have, by using holy water and holy oil and salt and continuous prayers on a repetitious fashion, it will totally and completely put the demonic in a defensive mode, and at that point it would just simply become tormented as we continue the prayers, and then at that point it will finally give its name up, and at that point when we could finish the ritual and we could command it to come out in the name of Christ.
Why is it
the multiple demonic situation? Mm-hmm. We have to repeat the same ritual over and over and over again. It could take, as I said, a couple of years, and this is like three or four times a week visit and
My
doing
word.
The same ritual over and over and over again. So it could take 3 hours to have someone delivered, or it could take someone over 2 years.
And the turning point is once the demon gives up its name, that's it.
Once he gives up his name, first of all, in the very, very first portion of the encounter, it's going to try to make you believe that it's not there. It's going to try to hide itself deep within that individual. So the exorcist has to do all he can to provoke this demon by using sacramentals. And as a result, the demon will slowly come out and identify itself, and then maybe not by name, but at least by its presence, you can see by the manifestations of it.
Hmm.
At that point, Then you start drilling it, and that's what you're doing. Basically, you're drilling it into, and you're actually interrogating it to a point, and you're asking for its name. Then it gives its name. It's a long, dragged-out process, but it has to be done by the numbers.
Where does it go once it leaves the body? Once you've set that person free, the demon gives up its name. Where does it go?
The demon gives up its name and it comes out of the individual. I like to think it goes to hell. But however, if the person that has been delivered does not change his or her lifestyle and continues to do the same reckless behavior as he or she did before we got involved, then the demon will come back, not only the one, but it will come back with many demons. And then we'll have a multiple possession of demonic possession in our hands, which means that the situation would have been escalated and it'd be more severe. So, and we instruct, the people, our victims, what they should do to have a closer relationship with God and to fill that void in their life. Because once the demonic is out, there's a void that's still emptied in their life, and they have to have that filled with something. And this is where their behavior modification would take place.
Are you able to catch a glimpse of the demon as it's leaving the body?
I have seen demons come out of walls. I've seen demons walking, okay, in rooms filled with demons, with demonic entities. And their description is more like a gray, dried face with always a black hood. It seems like they love the black hood thing. But I've seen, in a demonic infestation, I've seen what appeared to be the likeness of a demon, and it was not one but many in one place. So I've actually seen the demon. Now, have I actually seen the demon come out of an individual? No, I have not, but I have sensed it because something happens. The person, the victim has, there's a complete transformation. The victim regains their color. Sometimes you can smell a sweet aroma. The victim becomes, confused but yet relieved. So there's a big transformation that takes place once the demonic leaves the individual. So you would know. But to actually see the embodiment of the demon come out, I have never seen that. I'm not going to say it's not possible, because in dealing with these matters, anything is possible. Dealing with the demonic, anything is possible. So I never rule out anything.
Archbishop Vail, could you leave us with a closing prayer as we close the program?
I sure can. In the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen. Father in heaven, I pray that everyone who hears my voice may take to heart the reality of the words that I have spoken. I pray that each person who may need our help may call us and may receive your relief and your blessing. I pray that you be with us. Help us to be aware of the reality of the demonic and help us to gain the knowledge we need to protect ourselves. I pray this, dear Lord, in your name. In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. Archbishop, thank you for spending time with us, and I wish you well and many years.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
OrderofExorcists.com. They're recruiting an army for God, folks. And if you're a seminarian or a priest, they need you. We all need you. My thanks to our new technical producer, Ian Robertson. Good job. Albert Vinzel, as always. And all of you for listening. Back next week with a brand new program. It'll be a good one. I'll guarantee that. In the meantime, don't be afraid. There's nothing hidden. There's nothing... Sorry, I've forgotten that. I've been thrown. That's perhaps the devil trying to intercede in this program. You've heard it before. You know the drill. All right, we'll leave it at that. Move over, Aphrodite. I'm coming home. I can't believe I forgot that.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.